If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase. Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, I have a topic for the Marin.
This is so great because I had a lot of anxiety about the Marin today.
Well, I think a lot like a comic professional, you've got to go out into the world to get your material, right?
Yeah, you got to go... Gotta go take a premise walk from time to time.
That's what that's called. I had an entire premise evening a while ago. I went to a rock concert put on by friend of the show and third host of the hit podcast Friendly Fire, yeah! John Roderick. I went out two nights in a row, Ben.
Whoa.
Two rock concerts in a row because he did a Friday-Saturday engagement at a great venue in Seattle.
Is that I barely ever go see live performances of music, but I know that there's a culture of people that like want to go see every engagement an act they like does in their area and then compare set lists and stuff. Is that something that you're into or?
No, I'm not a completist like that, but this was a pretty rare thing because John was playing with the first significant band that he had in Seattle, and it was a band that broke up badly and was, I mean, there's a whole mythology about Western State Hurricanes that you could make a documentary about even if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. The documentary does not go well, Enterprise.
Yeah. So it was a compelling case for seeing both nights of the show, and I was happy to do it. And I mean, not to cut to the end, but I'm really glad I did. I thought the shows were awesome.
Nice. But were you rolling or were you just there for fun?
No, I was there as a civilian, which is great. Like, I watched, like, other people shot it, which is a delight. I mean, you and I have talked about this before, how much we enjoy video production now that we're not doing it.
Yeah.
As spectators, it's the best.
Yeah. When I see an event videographer in particular, that is the hardest videography there is, just because there's...
It absolutely is, yeah.
Because there's always the next thing that you got to run and go get, and, you know, the event's not going to stop for you, so the stakes are super high, and I have a special place in my heart for the folks that do that work.
Yeah, solidarity to all our friends of DeSoto who are also event videographers. Anyway, something happened to me in the first 5 minutes of getting to the first of the two shows, that I'm wondering if this has ever happened to you, because, and I'm using this term incredibly loosely, like it needs a belt and suspenders. We're newly famous, Ben.
Welcome to the good life.
And it makes being in public a little different, especially at an event like this, where like there's a lot of crossover interest between those that like what John does and those who like what we do. I mean, sharing a show with him is part of the reason for that.
Right.
So I arrive at the show. I'm with some friends. We're watching the music. We're having fun. And the very first thing that happens to me when I enter the room is someone I don't know walks up to me and says, "I'm going to buy you a drink."
Welcome to the good life.
Wow. No kidding.
That is not how I took it, Ben. Mistakes were made. I forgetting myself entirely in this moment, like I size this person up and I look him square in the eyes and I say, why?
Welcome to the good life.
Which is so stupid. Like, I need to know that, I need to assume what that's about. And after a moment, this person explained, like, he really liked what we do. He liked our shows, wanted to just pay me a kindness.
Yeah.
Give me a drink at the show, which was like super nice.
I think it's very hard to imagine that somebody says that they want to do something like that and really means it, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this was the first of a number of that kind of interaction that I believe and hope that I got better at as the night went on and as both nights went on. Like, there were a lot of friends of DeSoto there.
Wow, that's super cool.
That came up and said hi. All of them sweet. Every, like, to a person, they were awesome. But I am still up in my head about that first interaction. And this, Marin, might be aimed at an audience of one. But, like, I'm really sorry I reacted that way. And I was not... That was just an unexpected thing out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That I was not prepared to contend with in that moment. And, like, I learned from that experience, and what I did, rightly or wrongly, was assumed that everyone who came up to me was a fan and liked me for what I did. Which really does wonders for the kind of social anxiety that I have in large groups of people. Like, it sort of flipped the switch. It ended up being a good thing in the long run, but in that one specific moment, I'm afraid it might have been a bad thing for that person who tried to do something nice. So
yeah.
To whoever that was, I want to apologize. And to everyone else who came and said something nice or tried to and eventually did buy me a drink, thanks. That was a good evening among friends.
That's cool. I have not had a ton of experiences like that, but that's, you're basically entering the hot zone when you're at a John Roderick related thing,
right.
I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't assume when I walk out of my house and down the street to go to the grocery store, I'm going to run into a friend of DeSoto, but out in the world, it's happened. I ran into a friend of DeSoto on my flight back from France a couple of months ago. Like,
yeah,
it does happen. I mean, like, when there start to be tens of thousands of listeners to something, I suppose the odds just go up a little bit.
It's so much more shocking when you work in an audio medium, though. Like,
right.
That was part of the surprise of the whole thing. Like, I didn't expect to be recognized.
Yeah. I go back and think about our tour posters that are often centered around the premise of one or the other of us is nearly nude. And
yeah,
if
I mean,
we
I
were
was,
making good choices back then, you know?
I was fully clothed at these shows, so
yeah.
I don't know what they were going on.
Yeah, like it doesn't seem like if you're not in justice wear,
yeah,
rocking Nuck,
yeah,
you would be immediately recognizable. But apparently you are.
One thing that David Letterman said about being a celebrity has stuck with me over the years since he retired, which was the upside to being famous at his level is that the world feels like his neighborhood.
Right.
And in a very, very small way, that's what it felt like going to these rock shows. That was really fun.
Yeah, that's a level of fame that I don't think that we're at risk of getting to. But
no, not at all. But at a Seattle rock show with a specific performer, like,
yeah.
I think that is going to be a consequence.
Yeah. Weird.
And it was fun. Yeah. Yeah, really fun. And now I'm moving away from the possibility of that ever happening again. So,
yeah. So that's
great. Unique moment that we'll never repeat.
And just to that one friend of DeSoto who came up to Adam, on Adam's behalf, I am so sorry.
Did I not sufficiently apologize?
I just want to make sure that it's clear that I'm also sorry.
I know if there's an opportunity for you to apologize, you'll take it. So
I feel everyone's guilt as though it is my own.
Yeah, so hopefully that can be instructive to you at some point, Ben, and to anyone else who is maybe struggling with a change in social status. Yeah, why maybe might not be the best first thing to say when someone tries to be nice to you. But it's also just fucking perfect. Like, I could not just accept someone's kindness without scrutinizing it.
Yeah. You're under a lot of stress right now, man. Don't beat yourself up too much.
I feel like this was therapeutic to talk it out with you, so.
Good, good.
It's over and done now.
Well, I think there's a bunch of other characters in the series that we are reviewing right now that need therapy, Adam. Do you want to do you want to get into some of those issues?
Yeah, nice pivot into episode, Ben. Let's go ahead and get into Deep Space Nine, Season 6, Episode 3, Sons and Daughters.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
This episode opens up with some hot makeouts between Worf and Jadzia.
You can tell this is still a new relationship because they're doing the makeout against the wall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Pushing her up against it.
If you get aroused and you're a Klingon and then you're unable to finish, do you have 4 blue balls?
I don't know. Do they have 4 balls? Or do they have 2 balls that are ducted into 2 dicks?
Into 2 dicks. I mean, this is a great question. What we need is some more Star Trek sexual anatomy.
Yeah. We need a, next season of Discovery, hopefully they show a Klingon penetrating someone and we get that shot from behind where we see the balls swinging and we can establish what number of balls there are.
We need the Akutagram poster on the Klingon ship's sickbay wall that just shows like the sexual anatomy of a Klingon. It'd be great.
Yeah, this makeout session is interrupted by Sisko.
Sisko to Dax.
They're getting back to Starbase 375. So no sex will be taking place. Which, I mean, I had kind of done the math because we're obviously on a Klingon ship, but you're not hearing any chains dragging or banging sounds. So it didn't seem like it was on the table from a mood standpoint.
I felt the same way. Especially with how the last episode ended. Like, you remember the last scene of the last episode? We're on the planet surface.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to this ship.
Yeah.
I feel like we missed part of that story, but I guess we can make assumptions about what happened. Martok scooped him up.
Yeah, there's a brief lip service paid to that. I think Sisko's like, hey, thanks for the assist on that.
Which of these buttons calls your parents to pick you up?
Because they'd gotten the radio from that one guy, right?
From Keevan.
From Keevan.
Yeah.
We need to talk about Keevan. Did we do that joke on that episode?
God, I don't think we did, but got to go back for it.
Yeah.
Turn the pod car around and pick that one up.
Just imagine if we had edited something from this episode into the last episode.
Yeah. Could you even? One thing we get a little bit of here that we so rarely get is the O'Brien and Bashir conspiratorially making fun of their circumstances like that.
Yeah.
The loose O'Brien vibes from the last ep have carried over to this one in a fun way.
It seems like O'Brien, maybe more than anyone, really resents getting dragged back into being at war.
Yeah.
I think it's not even as much in the writing as how Colomini is playing O'Brien. Like I thought I put all this foolishness behind me and now I'm stuck doing this again.
You think they let Ben Maxwell out of prison to fight this war? I mean, they probably need all the captains they can get at this point.
Yeah, give him a ship. He's really going to stick it to these guys. Yeah, probably.
I think I would. Like, O'Brien is close with Admiral Ross. They all are. I think he could ask him a favor.
Yeah. Ben Maxwell would be in there cutting Jem'Hadar heads off with his bare hands.
I think this is the only scene where we get our main crew. For the rest of the episode, we cut between DS9 and Worf on the Rotoran. Worf has remained there working for Martok.
Yeah, and Martok's still on a bird of prey, like a surprisingly small ship for a guy that was like the head general of the Klingon Empire. last season.
He constantly complains about the missions he gets on the ship, but he never complains about the ship itself. And he really should, because I think that's part of the insult of this whole thing.
Yeah.
If he's this great hero, he should have better equipment. And a better crew. Like, one of the things they're arguing about right here is they need to be restaffed, and they were expecting a lot more people than the five that they're being given.
Five. I requested 15.
And they were expecting those people to be just Klingon warriors and not four Klingon warriors and one Worf's son, Alexander.
Yeah.
Who is majorly pissed. He is here with a chip firmly upon his armored shoulder.
Alexander is different from the others in the lineup because he does not have Klingon voice. He very clearly has guy who grew up on Earth with the Rashenko's voice, you know?
Mr. Worf, prepare to launch a class 4 probe to study the energy field.
Why did Worf retain his Klingon voice?
That's a great question.
I guess he was probably like 6 or 7 years old when the Kittimer massacre happened. So maybe he had enough grounding in the culture. It's like if you learn a language when you're like 10 or 11, you'll always have an accent. But if you learn it as a kid, you might not.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. This is a question that's answered later on, but I was surprised that Martok didn't recognize Alexander or know who he was at all. Martok is not the kind of boss that takes an interest in your personal life, and I can respect that.
Yeah, not the kind of boss or family member.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, Weird. They talk about that a little bit, right? Like, Martok is like, Worf, I'm hurt.
Yeah.
You haven't opened up emotionally to me.
Maybe that's why Martok gets the bird of prey. Like, he's just a little too caring as a Klingon captain to get one of the bigger ships.
Yeah, he's got a bit of a soft touch.
Yeah.
You would think that Rozhenko would have piqued Martok's interest, right? Like, Martok doesn't even do the math on that.
Yeah.
Does Martok know that Worf's last name is Rozhenko?
Clearly not.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, of course, because Earth, right. Oh, yes. That makes sense now. Kapla.
You know, I have all these personnel files in my head. It's and I'm very old.
That must have been over on the right side of the piece of paper. Obviously, I don't see that well on that side.
Back on DS9, up in the balcony at Quark's, a meeting of the New Resistance is taking place, and it's a very small meeting because it just involves Kira and Odo. But only seconds pass before Jake rolls up wanting to join their resistance club. And that term is so condescending.
Is
this the resistance club meeting? Cool.
He's one of the worst students we've got.
Can you get Gen Ed credit for participating in this? No? Okay, well, I'm still kind of interested.
Up in the balcony at Quark's, there's the reserved paper tent sign on the table up there, and it just says reserved for Resistance Club, in quotes. And it's in Comic Sans, like, no one takes it seriously, and it's totally in open view.
There was a kid that I went to college with. He was around for freshman year and then, like, the first part of sophomore year, and then stopped coming to classes, and as far as anybody knew, he dropped out. And then I realized that I was part of the comedy magazine, and when I would go to the weekly comedy magazine club meeting, I would pass the sci-fi club, and he still kept going to the sci-fi club after dropping out of classes.
Well, you gotta do that.
It's priorities, man.
Can't give up that club.
Yeah.
Club membership not dependent on student enrollment.
I guess not. Yeah. Like, he could still get into the university building and all that. I mean, if that's your support system, I think it's good that they let you keep going. But
Kira and Odo look at Jake's interest with some incredulity here. And I think they're right.
Yeah. Like, what are you just trying to infiltrate this to write some story for your imaginary newspaper, Jake?
That's exactly it. There's nothing about Jake that is trustworthy at this point. And I think they're right to be suspicious of his motivations here.
I can help.
How?
Quark maybe does Jake a kindness in trying to talk him out of being involved with it.
If you are looking for something to do, I could use another waiter.
If his mission is to consume the tea in order to write the stories, I think being a waiter might be a better angle for him to take than Resistance Club.
Yeah, like if this is a bar where people are sitting around openly talking about fomenting a rebellion, like yeah. you could overhear a lot of shit at this bar.
Quark breaks up the meeting by telling Kira that it's almost time to greet Dukat, which we are made to understand is a regular duty of hers. Every time Dukat comes back to the station, she must be there waiting. And that just feels bad.
Yeah, and she's supposed to get her fancy dress on.
Yeah.
You look lovely just the way you are.
Gul Dukat. Dukat. Gul Dukat. So,
Dukat comes back and he is busting. He is very happy to see her and also very happy to be rolling with a certain someone who we thought was maybe getting sent to Bajor to be put in character mothballs for mm-hmm. a big part of this season. But it's Zial. She's back.
That she'd be sent to the Bajoran farm where they sent Keiko to retire.
Yeah, she's going to be happier there. She'll have lots of space to run around.
The effervescence of Dukat and Zial here is basically maintained throughout the episode, but Damar is not feeling this way. It's a real good spoon, bad spoon situation between them. Damar is just positively brooding throughout.
Is the good spoon the inner spoon or the outer spoon in your estimation?
I mean, I like being the outer spoon most.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, because you're a Coldman.
I like to control the heat. Yeah.
I hate being outer spoon because I get too hot and then I feel like I have a social obligation to remain too hot.
Oh, no. See, that's the thing. Like, it's easier to wiggle out of a snug if you're the big spoon. You get overheated, you just roll right over. But if you're the little spoon, you're stuck.
Yeah. I just know that I'm going to be disappointing if I if I wiggle out of my spoon duties.
Yeah.
Daddy Dukat and Zial, very, very happy. And I almost felt like Zial seemed like she was drunk on Dukat's Kool-Aid or something.
Indeed.
Like
yeah.
she has much happier feelings about him than seemed justified by previous interactions they've had.
It didn't take much convincing.
Drunk is a great description, Ben. I thought that she may have been drugged or otherwise hypnotized or something.
Yeah.
It just seemed so out of keeping with what we know the truth of her life to be.
Yeah. I mean, there's an interaction between Kira and Zial where Kira calls her on this and Zial is like, you have no idea how uncomfortable Bajor was for me.
Yeah.
And I wonder if just like being on a ship full of people that aren't like staring down their ridged noses at her was enough to turn her mood around.
Yeah.
In some way.
That, it's that feeling that combines relief and happiness.
It's a hell of a combination.
That's where she's at.
Yeah, I mean, like, I wondered about whether Cardassians are like that to her too, though, because, you know, we know that Cardassians have a certain natural xenophobia that can be enhanced with drugs.
Uh-huh.
Like, is she Cardassian enough to be that they accept her as one of their own? Or are they doing the same thing as the Bajorans?
She may be on a 50 milligram dose of Hitler. Coated tablets.
Consult your physician if hatred lasts longer than 4 hours.
Right. Yeah, that's not a meme that we're asking for. Just going to put that out there. I don't want to see pictures of medicine called Hitler in my in my mentions. That you're going to get muted if you do that.
Yeah. Speaking of people calling people on things, Martok does call Worf on this whole "you have a son?" !! thing.
Yeah.
It is a difficult subject to discuss.
Martok wants to keep the Rotoran drama-free and bloodwine-friendly, and this whole relationship between Worf and Alexander is kind of breaking an essential rule.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really tough story that Worf tells. It's interesting to hear a character describe something that we have seen a lot of. Like, we saw what his relationship with Alexander was like on TNG.
He's not fair.
The boy is unreasonable.
And we know that Alexander got sent away at some point, but it seemed like their relationship was trending in a really positive direction toward the end. Like there was a lot to struggle against at first, and then as Alexander grew and Worf embraced his role of fatherhood more, I felt like they were starting to really move in a positive direction. And what Worf describes here is that he has not been in touch with Alexander at all for years and is basically shocked to see Alexander showing up on this ship. And to Martok's credit, he's basically like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You're a father. How could you do that to your son?
Say it louder.
I've abandoned my child! I've abandoned my child!
Both now and at the end of the episode, I think it's super clear. Worf, not a good person, and especially not a good father, I don't think.
I think that it's good that Worf looks back on this with some rue and some regret.
Yeah.
But regret is not enough. It's my favorite Bond film.
Later on, Alexander visits Worf, and the father-son conversation does not go well. Enterprise. Worf does not believe Alexander is in this for the cause. He thinks Alexander is doing this at him.
Yeah. I wondered how Alexander arranged it that he would be on this ship. Did they explain that in a way that you understood?
They didn't, and it seems statistically impossible that he would be assigned there out of coincidence.
Right. Yeah. The story that they should have told is like Saving Private Rozhenko, where Worf is sent on a behind enemy lines mission because Alexander is marooned on some planet defending a bridge somewhere. And then they finally meet him and it's like, he's like not quite what they thought.
I would love that story almost exactly, except if you switched Alexander for whoever Kern turned into. Like imagine the Saving Private Ryan story where Private Ryan doesn't know he's Private Ryan. That's pretty stressful.
This doesn't make any sense. I have no brother.
Why would you commit all of these resources just to save me?
I'm just a humble TSA agent back on Kronos.
This is something that we could and should talk about at the end, but I think whether or not you like this episode largely depends on how much you care at all about Alexander. And at this moment in time, Worf kind of doesn't.
Yeah, well, if you're taking your cues from Worf about who to care about.
Yeah.
You're fucked up. I mean, this is one of those episodes also where I feel like the circumstances of story do it a bit of a disservice because they needed to get Dax back with the Starfleets and Worf back with the Klingons. And so the person that can be there to hear Worf's deepest, most intimate thoughts is not there. And I think she would even more forcefully call him on his bullshit than Martok would.
That's a really great point. And that was part of what felt so uncomfortable about Martok taking such an interest in Worf's personal life. Like, Martok really is playing the part of Dax here.
Yeah.
Except, you know, Martok's going to finish Worf off.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's performance, because of sickness, the role of Jadzia Dax will be performed by General Martok.
Finally, it's my time.
Always an understudy, never a star. No more.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
On DS9, Kira tells Zial that she's going to have to bail on the dinner that was proposed to her early on in the episode in the airlock. But they do get into the reason why Zial left Bajor in this scene. It's because of the feeling of being ostracized that you were talking about, Ben. She feels obligated to Dukat and her family in a way that doesn't seem quite motivated. But she's fully committed to the idea of making it work on DS9. DS9 is a place that she's doubling down on as her home.
This station is the closest thing I have to a home.
This is Zial being fairly manipulative, though. Like, she wants to get mom and dad together.
Right.
And she's, like, really twisting Kira's arm in order to make it work.
It's interesting. Like, she's been such a naive and innocent character, and now she's starting to develop a skill of manipulation, and I wonder if it is to do with the fact that she's been spending so much time with Master Garrick.
Yeah, I think so.
Rubs off.
The Rotoran meets up with a fleet of drain cleaner class cargo ships, and in the mess hall we
get those Cardassian before, but now they're like, if they make them in green they're Klingon, but if they make them in burnt sienna they're Cardassian.
I like the logic of how these ships look. Like, they look like cargo containers bolted onto like a long skinny ship.
There's an equivalent to containerization of global shipping in the future, so it would make sense that different species would have similar ships.
I like that a lot. Alexander should know better in this mess hall scene, because I don't think you can ever trust a Klingon who's being nice and polite to you. And that's what this bully Klingon, Chitarg, is. He's invited him over. He's sitting him down.
Would you care for some grawpox sauce?
They're making fun of everything about Alexander, except for the cake plate he's chosen to eat his meal off of. Doesn't seem like a very good piece of dinnerware to be using, especially if your food is liable to crawl.
It's a cake plate with wok handles.
Yeah.
Did you notice that Gabrielle Union was playing one of the Klingons that boards the ship with him?
I did, and I thought it was great.
That was so fun. A very young Gabrielle Union.
I feel like they gave her the John Tesh part. Like, they give her a lot of cutaways, like cutaway to expression and cutaway to a couple of words. She doesn't do much in the episode at all, but I mean,
she's got a lot of lines. It's just mostly like functionary, like she's working the helm or whatever.
It's work dialogue and not character dialogue.
Yeah. Was she famous at this point? I don't think she really was.
No? That would surprise me. I thought this was one of those things that you get a certain level of fame and you're a big fan of Star Trek and you want to
call your agent and say,
yeah, make me a bit part in Star Trek is how I thought her story would go.
She is like as famous as it gets now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to imagine a time before she was famous.
Yeah. What was her level of fame in 97?
She had done like an episode of Moesha, an episode of Family Matters, two episodes of Saved by the Bell, The New Class.
She didn't make the leap yet.
She had done like some spots in some TV shows, and this was one among many of those. And then 1999, she's all that. And then 10 Things I Hate About You, and she is off to the races.
Yeah.
Forever and anon.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good job by Gabrielle Union.
Good job by Star Trek for catching a rising star.
Alexander doesn't just eat shit at this lunch. He fights back against his bully.
Yeah, and, I mean, if this guy had put a bunch of yamek sauce on his plate, it would be one thing, but he puts Gropak sauce on, and Alexander is just not going to tolerate that.
You can't oversauce your Klingon meal.
Yeah.
It's just swimming in it. Alexander gets a slice in on Chitarg before being thrown into the buffet table in an embarrassing fashion. Worf has been watching the entire thing also from some remove, but he stops the fight with a classic open-handed punch to Chitarg's face, and then his punishment is grounding them as if they're children.
You will remain in quarters until your next watch.
I thought it was interesting, first of all, that the crew has totally cycled over from the people that were on the Rotaran the last time we spent any time on this ship. Like, none of the familiar faces from that episode are back in this one. And also, when Alexander's being bullied, he's called Son of Worf in this like sing-song mocking tone. Like, this is like they got rid of the old crew from whom Worf had earned respect and replaced him with a new crew that, again, doesn't respect Worf.
It's so interesting how like your Klingon house is of such importance, and like your family line is crucial in your understanding of, like, from warrior to warrior, that's so crucial in an understanding of them.
Yeah.
And yet, like, Alexander's family line is weaponized in that way. It's a weakness for him.
On the station, Zial starts opening up to Kira and Dukat about her ambitions as an artist. She doesn't just want to be tricky and manipulative. She also wants to make people feel things by presenting them imagery. And Dukat and Kira agree that these are great drawings, these very spare brushstroke drawings that she's done.
Junk, soon to be consigned to the trash heap of art history.
And Kira wants to compare them to the artwork of some Bajoran Vedic, and Dukat wants to compare the artwork to some Cardassian artist. And that, like, provides an opportunity for Zial to say that, like, her great ambition with her art is to build unity and show that there aren't that many differences between different peoples.
I suppose you could argue that all contemporary art is feces.
I love Nana Visitor's take here, because Dukat is obviously, like, finds this noble of Zial, and Kira's take, like, her face says ridiculous.
Yeah.
Whatever face a person makes to purely communicate that word, that's what she does.
Again, with drafting off the stuff we were talking about with the way Bajorans were really uncool and racist to Zial.
Yeah.
This is not necessarily casting the Bajorans in the greatest light, right? Like, the Cardassians are maybe, like, don't work in good faith all the time, and, like, we have our complaints about the way their society is set up and everything, but at least, like, Dukat can see an optimistic future. Like, Kira is willing to foreclose immediately on the idea of what Zial's ambition is, which is some cold shit.
I'm kind of on Kira's side about this, because, like, culture is of such importance to the Bajorans, especially, like, art culture and architecture. Like, we've been told this season after season. Like, it's one of the things that make Bajorans Bajorans. And it almost feels like the way that Jenna Bush is invited to be a host of the Today Show. Like, there's the idea that Zial is the daughter of a dictator who's done terrible things. There is, I think, a natural resistance to inviting someone related to that into your culture.
Right.
When your culture is of such importance to your people.
Yeah.
Like, it's the one thing they have control over. They don't have control over the station or being occupied or the planet. Like, they have control over what they give value to as their cultural artifacts. And I think it's natural for her to resist this.
Yeah. I mean, I think It also speaks to Zial's, like, naivete, which Jenna Bush seems to flow over with.
Yeah.
And, like, we don't want to be the people that, like, blame children for the crimes of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, there is, like, a judicial version of that and a cultural version of that. And you're kind of writing for the second one, I guess.
Yeah, I think
in this context.
I might not be writing for it as much as I'm understanding of it.
Hmm. Yeah. This is that first dinner back after Dukat comes back to the station, and Zial, like, runs off to do something, and we find Dukat and Kira sitting next to each other on a love seat, like, talking about how great Zial is, and then it sort of washes over both of them, like, fuck, she tricked us into being friendly with each other.
Yeah. Yep.
And it seems as uncomfortable for Dukat as it does for Kira, because he likes the times when he can kind of, like, force herself to supplicate to him.
Yeah.
And this is just them as peers, basically mother and father figures, just talking over the progress of their beloved daughter.
It's the scene in the late 90s movie where the stepkids have conspired to put their estranged parents together in a restaurant, like, that they made a reservation for under both of their names. Like, it's that kind of thing.
Are you trying to parent trap us?
No.
The Rotoran has cloaked itself, which means the mission has begun, this protection of the cargo ships. And Worf and Martok discuss the situation. He's pissed at Worf. He's pissed that Worf has been so distant since Alexander arrived. He's like, I used to have a great first officer, man. And now I'm not even getting the reports I used to get. So he like he sort of gives Worf the task of making Alexander battle ready. He hears about this fight in the mess hall and is like, well, that didn't go over well. I think if Chitara can get one over on him, what chance does Alexander have against a Jem'Hadar?
Are you going to fight the Jem'Hadar for him as well?
This kind of feels like a reversal of Soldiers of the Empire, where Worf is being forced to confront the lack of readiness of one of his underlings by Martok rather than the other way around.
Yeah, good call.
And I mean, like, Martok has like even more skin in the game in this context, because he's like, hey, like if you're in my family, then he kind of is too. And I think you need to make sure you solve this terrible parenting problem that you've made for yourself. And a lot of that is like pushing the bird out of the nest stuff. Like, don't intervene when he's getting in a fight in the mess hall because he needs to learn how to stand up for himself.
It's hard because like Worf doesn't have the power to get Alexander out of the ball kicking machine, which is a place that Alexander is the entire episode, including here. Like, they get called out to the bridge. It's weird. Like, they're talking about training up Alexander, and then the very next scene is another shot to the nuts for Alexander because he forgets to turn off the weapons readiness test, and they totally false alarm this emergency situation.
Yeah. He kind of war games them.
It's weird that Alexander is the tactical officer on the Rotoran, just like his daddy on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Except he is not good.
Apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah. Yeah. The big takeaway from this scene is that he's the ship's fool.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, Worf really bags on him for this, but that's kind of what Worf's role was in like the first couple of seasons of TNG.
It's true. Do you think it's like the narcissism of minor differences is the reason that they don't get along? I think so.
I see a lot of myself in the boy.
Yeah. Yeah. If Alexander fails to open doors in this episode, I think we'll know how close that apple has come to rest.
Yeah.
What are you doing now?
Exactly. Back on the station, we're wrapping up a meeting where Gul Dukat is making the magnanimous gift of a number of industrial replicators to the Bajorans, you know, as a demonstration of the newfound peace between their people under the boot heel of the Dominion.
Hand in hand, we'll march into a new era.
Please clap.
Thank you. Thank you. That will be all.
And everybody claps and leaves the room, and he says, Kira, do you mind waiting behind? And invites her to a little celebration at his house to do with Zial's paintings getting into some exhibition somewhere on Cardassia, which, from a passage of time standpoint, like, this kind of felt like it was just like the next day, like,
yeah,
another excuse for Kira to come over. Then I was like, is this like a month later? Like, has like a lot of time transpired here?
Yeah, hard to know what the passage of time was. But I think, crucially, it feels soon. It feels like Dukat's really laying it on thick with all of the invitations to hang.
Yeah. So the first time she got invited to something at his house in this episode, it was an automatic no until she was talked into it. And this time it's an automatic yes.
I'll be there, man.
Things aren't going well on the Rotoran. W/R/T Alexander's melee fighting skills. I bet Worf wishes he had a holodeck loaded with those Skeletors, because when you just have a dojo and a batleth, it's not great. And Worf is not an encouraging teacher. Like, I feel like Worf was a better yoga instructor than he is a batleth teacher in this scene. Is he not doing yoga anymore? I think that might be a big reason why he's got such a hair trigger with his temper.
Oh, yeah. He needs to let some steam off.
Yeah.
His Klingon yoga class.
Worf hasn't journeyed to Shavasana in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing like classic bad teacher mistakes of every time Alexander tries something, just pointing out what he's doing wrong and not reinforcing the things he's doing right.
Yeah.
But also, like, I think that the actor that played Alexander made really good choices here. Like, you talked about his voice being not super Klingon-y, and I think that that's good. But also, the fact that he is a little whiny when he's fighting. Like, you totally forgive him for not being good at fighting, but also you're like, God, this guy sucks.
Yeah. You know?
Like, it's hard to root for him, intentionally so.
Mark Warden plays Alexander in this episode, and another quality about his performance is that he has resting about to cry face a lot too.
Right. Yeah, and he looks a little like he looks a little dewy, you know. He's got they gave him kind of rosy cheeks. He doesn't look like a rugged warrior.
Yeah.
He looks like he's been spending a lot of time at the beach.
This is maybe the moment in the episode where I wanted to drop this conversational bomb into it. Is this Star Trek's gay son story? Because that was the vibe that I got here. Like I feel like a lot in the late 90s, you got the story of, like, for example, military dad with the gay son, like the Hallmark movie or whatever, that where
he's
you
not
know,
a man's man.
Yeah. And that felt like what was going on here to an extent that, like, I wonder if they were unable to tell that story specifically. And so they told it the way they did here.
Boy, I really hope that that's not what was behind this script, because it's real retrograde thinking if that's the case. Like, oh, Worf wasn't tough on him enough as a boy, and it made him all femmy or whatever.
Right, but that, like, I'm putting myself back in 1997 and going, God, like, is that the dark center to this thing? Because there's a lot about both of these characters that kind of match up to that way of thinking.
Yeah. Well, I'd say at best an unfortunate comparison can be made between those.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
You must be pleased. Now you can tell me what a failure I am as a Klingon.
Things end in this scene pretty tearfully. And before we know it, we're back on DS9 at Kira's where, I mean, who's the guy you want showing up at your apartment more than anyone? Damar is the guy that shows up with this evening dress for Kira.
Damar is being insulted and Kira is also being insulted.
Yeah, everyone loses in this scene. It's great.
Yeah, it's like she's been lulled into a sense of normalcy by Zial, and she like is initially really excited by this dress, but then she like it washes over her when she's looking at it in the mirror and she throws it on the ground. Disgust. Happy birthday to the ground.
This really feels like a Hitler secretary moment, you know? Like, you get used to the many benefits of being close to evil.
I don't understand. How could you be a secretary to a medication, Adam?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Now we're mixing metaphors, aren't we?
The show doesn't make any sense.
You know what's interesting about this scene and the way it's blocked is that Kira goes along with everything until she looks at herself in the mirror. And this is something that's happened to Kira over time throughout many episodes. It takes her seeing herself to kind of snap out of the mental state she's in and recognize the truth of her circumstance. And the same happens here.
Yeah. It's a moment that made me wonder if any thought was given to the idea of having Kira choose to play this moment with a little bit more deception, because she immediately storms into Gul Dukat's quarters and starts flipping him a ton of shit about this idea.
You don't like the dress.
The dress is fine. I don't like you.
And like, if you're trying to start a covert resistance movement and the head of the station is buddying up to you like this, it seems like there would be some benefit in having him think that his overtures are working.
Yeah, she's not considering playing this three-dimensionally, and that's unfortunate. I think there are many benefits to allowing this to play out if you're her, but she can't turn that corner in her mind, and so she drops the dress off at Ducat's apartment, where we realize that Ducat is a re-gifter when he gives that same dress to his daughter, which is sort of creepy as fuck, right? Like, he clearly is attracted to Kira, bought a dress that emphasizes the things that makes her attractive to him, and now his daughter gets to wear it.
Like, if Trump seemed like the kind of person who would ever give anyone anything, this is the kind of thing he would do.
If Ducat was a little more like Larry David, I was expecting... Like, there's so much about Ducat's attitude in this entire episode that is very, like, bumbling and Larry David-like that I expected when Kira came in and dropped the dress at his feet for him to be like, no good? But what Kira does is sort of, she does the breakup that a person does to someone that they become close to socially at work, and she flips the switch back to work only as their relationship status.
Right.
She kind of breaks up with him.
Indeed she does.
Morn. Dear sweet. Morn.
In here, buddy.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
On the Rotaran, Worf's attempts to get through to Alexander haven't worked that well. So Martok is going to make an attempt. And he comes into Alexander practicing Bat'leth badly. This is something you see in a lot in like fantasy movies and stuff, where if the swordsman sucks, you compliment the blade. Like, oh yeah, well balanced, sure. I just pulled it off the wall of this dojo, so I don't think I could take any credit for that, but thanks.
That's great. What I didn't like about Alexander in the scene is that he's clearly a loud workouter, and I fucking hate that at any gym. You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
That's a choice.
Yeah. Take your Monica Seles grunts and get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Martok, though, cuts to the chase, right? He's going to get answers that he wasn't able to get out of Worf. And he's direct. He asks Alexander why he's there. And when Alexander can't answer the question, he tells him he's going to transfer him to another ship.
Yeah. I mean, Martok has basically all the same concerns as Worf, but because he's not blood related to Alexander, can press these issues without losing his fucking cool.
Right.
And I thought that was actually really good, like, well observed part of the episode.
That's so too.
And the deal that they make is Alexander just wants to get a chance to prove himself. And Martok is like, yeah, that has come and gone. So you're going to be reassigned to one of the ships we are escorting.
It's hard to know what Alexander is thinking when he challenges Worf to a knife fight later, because it's clear that he's pissed about being sent away again, but all the challenge does is just get Worf's attention. Like, this scene is so weird to me. Like, I love starting a scene with a knife being stabbed into a table. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
If you had challenged anyone else in that manner, you would be dead right now.
And he's clearly upset about being sent away, but is he trying to not be sent away? Is he trying to have Worf kill him ritualistically here?
I think that the thing with his character is that he just doesn't see a path to an identity, an adulthood that he can abide, that it doesn't go through living his life as a warrior, because that's all he's ever been told. And he basically feels like he needs to do this or die trying, because otherwise he'll never be able to find happiness.
Yeah.
And that's some fucked up shit that Worf put on him.
Yeah, it's true.
Something that Kalar was really trying to shield him from, too.
There's a repetition in this episode of these kinds of interactions. Like, they keep trying to come to some sort of understanding of each other, and they never do.
Yeah. So they get into this space fight with some Jem'Hadar who attack the convoy. And this is an extremely laconic fight where they're like, it really felt like they stretched this for time. Like, oh shit, we actually have like 4 minutes of episode left. And we really only wrote like 2 minutes of fight scene.
Yeah.
So, and we only have 15 seconds of model effects to use. So let's just add like some stuff of people having conversations on the bridge while the fight is going on.
His aft shields are down to 20%. And he's losing anti-protons from his starboard nacelle.
And, you know, like there's some exciting model work and stuff, but mostly it's, as the climax to the episode, it left a lot to be desired, in my opinion.
Yeah, the battle scene's lack of girders was a frustration to me. I was looking to the ceiling here, looking for that girder that was finally going to take Alexander out.
Where is Chekhov's girder?
Yeah. Yeah, but instead of a girder, what we get is the news of a plasma leak that needs fixing. And this is the scene in the submarine film where you send someone you love to go repair the thing in your stead. And Chitard goes with him. And this is the point in the episode where I was like, RSVP Alexander. I mean, either the plasma leak's going to take him out or Chitard is.
And it's none of those things. It's Alexander locked the door behind himself to deal with this leak, I guess, presumably, and not risk the other people. So he did an act of genuine valor and bravery, and he gets like the hand on the shoulder from Worf.
But what do you make of everyone laughing at him? Like, I thought implication was that he fucked up and accidentally tripped the lockdown button.
I think that they continue to believe that it was an accident, and Worf knows that it wasn't.
It was valor. Okay.
But it's a weird scene. Like, it's like
the ambiguity of it doesn't serve it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you cut the laughter bit, it just plays as like Alexander did the thing he was saying he was going to do. He did a valorous thing.
I mean, here's my punch up. The emergency doors open. Alexander's on the floor with a batleth through his back. We cut to Chitarg and he just shrugs his shoulders like, huh?
What are you going to do?
Oy, how did that happen?
How about this punch up? They press the button and the doors open and just a slurry of Alexander runs out because he's been plasmid to death.
The pink blood from Star Trek VI.
He needs the many'd them.
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it,
Back on DS9, Z'all finds Kira walking in a corridor and is like, hey, why did you flake out on that party? Really missed you there. You should have seen the dress I was wearing. I mean, it was very revealing. I mean, not the
Damar
sort of...
would not stop hitting on me.
Yeah, but Kira makes it pretty clear that she's not going to be the type that socializes with Dukat anymore. She puts her foot down. It's not happening. And Z'all may not understand it, but she accepts it, I think.
Please don't ask me to choose between you. I'm not.
The button on the episode is sort of the extended edition of the Klingon house joining ceremony. And this is... Alexander Roshenko being inducted into the august house that is House Martok.
You can tell that you're on a good ship and you're being inducted into a good house when they make the blood dressing tableside like this. You pay a little extra for it when you're initiated into House Martok, but it makes it into a ceremony that's nice.
Yeah, I love that.
You get the fresh Parmesan and...
It's a little old-fashioned, but it's like, I don't care.
Yeah,
I fucking love this shit.
Yeah, real like white tablecloth treatment there. Nice job, Martok.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
It's weird that we were promised an Alexander episode, but what it really was a Worf episode, right?
Yeah, I mean, one cannot exist without the other.
This ceremony at the end, I think, is... It's a thing that happens to these characters, but I don't feel like any of these characters have changed from the beginning of it to the end. Do you? And in that way, I feel a little unsatisfied by what happened here, this ep. And I think maybe that's as good as I could articulate it. It feels like no one grew or changed from this. I mean, Kira's the only one that went through any change as a character in her realization. But for something we were promised, I don't think it paid off in any way, the Worf and Alexander story. And it made me dislike Worf even more. I mean, kill Alexander this episode is what I say. Like, drop their girder on him. If you're going to keep teasing out this father-son taffy of of them being estranged, how many different times and ways can we see their estrangement? I think I'm a little bored by it at this point.
It's two series of television that don't seem to have their heart in actually telling this story in an interesting way.
Fucking shock Worf into feeling something for Alexander by killing him. Like, make him die tragically and bad and give us like some pathos to Worf, which has been like a major part of his character throughout his life. Like the tragedy of him being without a house, the tragedy of being an orphan, the tragedy of being a regretful father who never has a chance to make it right with his son. Like, go back to that, because at this point I don't feel sorry for Worf at all. And I feel like the show wants you to, and it's incapable of making me feel that way.
Yeah, it's I also think that the script is just very, like, it feels very mathematical. Like, yeah. The Kira gets invited to dinner, doesn't want to go, gets talked into it, goes, likes it, then feels bad. Kira does want to go to dinner, gets talked out of going to dinner, doesn't go to dinner.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the same story told two times with one bit flipped in each scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just, it left me feeling a little empty. And I think that overall, just like the climactic battle scene was kind of badly done. And the stakes of Alexander leaving the bridge and then getting laughed at later were like confusing and weird and not like, that's one of those moments that in a submarine film is the emotions are like almost operatic in scale when you're sealing somebody into the compartment and it's like, oh yeah, like we forgot to show the part of sealing into the compartment or explain satisfactorily what it was even.
Right.
Like, Steve Zahn died, man. Like, let's fucking focus on that.
I'm trying to imagine if the show had done that, if we could ever come out on the side of judging it as tropey, if they actually had, but I don't think so. I think it's something that Star Trek does really well is kill a character in a submarine fashion.
Yeah.
And I think I would have been into it.
Yeah.
If they had.
You know what I'm into, Adam, is our priority one message inbox. Do you want to see if we've got anything in there?
I bet you're into it. You look like you're into it. You're wearing the colored handkerchief out of your back pocket that has a bunch of P1s on it. You want to be P1'd on. That's what the color of your hanky says.
I'm a P1 freak.
Yeah.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message of two promotional messages here is from stopspying.org. And here's the copy for it. Ever worry we're turning into the mirror universe? Scared that technology like facial recognition will make us say RSVP to civil rights? You're not alone. The Surveillance Technology Oversight Project was founded by friends of DeSoto who believe new technology should promote the values of Starfleet, not create our own Tal Shiar. Learn more and maybe pitch in a few scarves at www.stopspying.org. That's www.stopspying.org, and help us before surveillance destroys all privacy everywhere. Boy, you can really tell that the people behind stopspying.org are friends of DeSoto. That is that's copy we could have written ourselves. It's great.
Yeah, I don't think we could have because we're not smart enough to write it that good.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried that we're turning into the mirror universe. I'm worried that we're already there. And I'm I'm really glad that, like...
I haven't been issued my leather cat suit. That's why I don't think we're in the Mirror Universe quite yet.
Oh, it's on the way. It came to the P.O. box, okay. And I forwarded yours on to you.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I gotta powder my legs before I pull that thing on.
Yeah, the stuff StopSpying.org is fighting is, like, really scary stuff.
Yeah.
And I am really glad that there are people out there picking these fights. They're, like, suing the MTA for using facial recognition and stuff.
Yeah.
These are big, important fights that are super important right now because, yeah, you know, this is the kind of thing where if it's adopted without any complaint off the bat, it's like gets harder and harder to unring that bell.
Yeah.
Going forward.
That's well put. I'm reading that the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project is a 501c3 nonprofit, which means that if your employer does gift matching, that you can double your effect if you were to give to them. So that's great news.
That's awesome. Well, I really encourage the Friends of DeSoto to check out StopSpying.org.
Yeah, they threw us some scarves for their promotional message, so let's throw some right back.
We have another promotional message, and this one is in scare quotes in the email that Danny Baruela sent to us. So the word promotional appears to be a stretch here, but I'll go ahead and read it. To Blonde and Marbles from Shimoda, in the crowd at your second wedding. Message. No star date on this one, as it's after midnight and I'm very drunk. Typing is hard. As alluded to in the P1 purchased at your real wedding, the Betazoid wedding has finally happening. We are drunk, naked, standing around a fire pit in the rain. The RA is handcuffing you together, and everyone is chanting, consummate! Rage! We are not a cult. On.
I think they overpaid for a personal message, Ben. And that's what happens when you're drunk. You click the wrong button.
And the call to action is, if you drunkenly promise friends at their /#/Betazoid wedding, you'll buy them a P1, do it then, not when they're in the Antipodes.
Yeah, you can't do it in the Antipodes. Everyone knows that.
Wow. That was a real... I feel like we went on a real journey with that one.
I think so, too.
I don't think that you could sober write something as drunk sounding as that is.
Yeah. The one way both of those messages were similar is that they both doubled their support of The Greatest Generation. You can support The Greatest Generation by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages like these are $200, and they really do a lot for continuing the ongoing production of this show.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
A drunk Shimoda was hard for me to find this episode. I think the person acting the most inexplicably might be Jake. What is he doing? You know what? Here's the thing. If they wrote Jake as more someone who needs friends in a place that he has none, and less cub reporter Jake Sisko, I think I might understand his motivations a little more. You know?
Yeah.
He's got to feel so isolated there, and we don't get even a whiff of that as a part of his character.
I think by three episodes into the season, they should have given us a real exploration of that, because he's maybe more up against it than anyone in this universe right now.
And yet I never feel like he's sad or isolated or missing his dad or any number of other ways a person could feel when they've been basically marooned.
Yeah.
So I wonder if we're going to get that angle to his character. It seems like some meat on the bone there.
Yeah.
What about you, Ben?
I am going to give my drunk Shimoda to the character or characters that are obviously having the most fun in this episode, and that is the Klingon High Command, because it is revealed fairly late in the episode that one of the cargo ships that they're escorting is called the Partok,
yeah,
which means somebody in the Klingon High Command thought it would be fun to send Martok to defend the Partok.
Oh, yeah. They're having fun over there.
They're just having fun. They're doing bits over there in the Klingon High Command.
That's great. That's great. Klingon High Council. They're just like us.
That's what I love about them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, today's episode was not one that we loved. Maybe we'll get something we like a little better for episode 4. What are we watching for the next episode, Ben, and how will we watch it?
Well, why don't you head over to gach.biz/game and fire up the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Prophets.
I'll do that right now.
Well, I tell you about season 6, episode 4, Behind the Lines. While Sisko's promotion takes him away from the Defiant, Odo's loyalties are tested by the arrival of a fellow shapeshifter.
How about that? All right. Sounds interesting. Well, What may interest those who follow along with us at our Will of the Prophets game is that our runabout is currently on square 53, where one square ahead is a Quark's Bar episode, and a few squares after that is a Looking at Each Other During.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Let's see if we hit either of those.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Ben, I have rolled a 4, which has hopped us over anything. They could do anything to our show to disrupt
it. Oh, wow.
We have been given the gift of a regular old episode, and believe me when I say it is a gift.
Yeah.
Pretty hard to imagine what a looking at each other during would have done to us at this moment in time.
I mean, it's not us I'm worried about. It's your marriage.
I think
would have really suffered.
When this episode comes out, I'll likely be driving down the coast with my dog riding shotgun.
Yeah.
So kind of a lot happening.
Big stuff.
But the show goes on, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to stop
that. I'm excited about
that.
A regular episode.
Me too.
I like them.
Yeah. They're my favorite kind, TBH.
I know I'm weird to say this, but I kind of like them.
I know.
All right, well, that'll be next week. In the meantime, we got to thank all the friends of DeSoto who support the show. You know, the Max Fun Drive is coming up in a couple of weeks as of the release of this episode.
Wow.
And we are getting all our ducks in a row to have a great big Max Fun Drive. I'm really, really excited about it. So if you don't currently support the show, in a couple of weeks, it is time to right that wrong. And if you do support the show and you got a little extra space in the budget, get ready to increase your support. It's going to be a lot of great great incentive gifts. And I mean, it's changed our lives. And we really, really appreciate all of the support from all of you guys.
Others who support the show include people like Bill Tilly. You can find him at BillTilly1973 on Twitter and a number of other places where he keeps his comedy trading cards made about every episode we do. Adam Ragusea is responsible for the great music you hear on the show, working off of the source material created by Dark Materia.
Indeed. And check out all the other shows on Max Fun. There's some really fucking fantastic podcasts on there. And, you know, go ahead and check out all the Earwolf podcasts also, and Gimlet.
The iHeartRadio podcasts, yeah. like... I just love big
Forever
companies.
Forever Dog, HeadGum, yeah. They are all fabulous. Every single podcast is good.
With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that is probably going to involve some gold commingling, right?
Mm.
Like Odo is going to be wearing his gold hanky at the back of his pocket.
Bashir's going to be jealous.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.